the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Bitcoin looked like it was about to break its bear trend a week ago when it rallied above $74,000 at the start of the war in Iran. Oil prices soared above $100 a barrel before retreating somewhat, and gold is holding firm above $5,000 an ounce. If Bitcoin is a safe haven asset, it certainly hasn't behaved like one. Investors rushed for gold and oil this last week, while Bitcoin behaves like Bitcoin always does. It's volatile and uncertain. In fact, Bitcoin is behaving more like a tech stock, and a very speculative one at that, rather than a safe haven asset. But let's not write it off just yet. Bitcoin has some correlation to gold during periods of risk, and this was particularly evident in the post-COVID years. There's been a decoupling in the last year, with gold outperforming Bitcoin by a wide margin. So what, in fact, is going on here? This challenges the digital gold narrative in crisis scenarios, where gold is supposed to, and in fact has done, attract money that is fleeing risk. And Bitcoin is acting more like an equity. To help us make sense of this, we're joined by no stranger to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, Shivan Mudli, macro strategist and quant analyst at Novaik. Hi, Shivan. Thanks again for joining us. Give us your reading on the Bitcoin price. This is very confusing. There's so many moving parts, balls in the air. Why has it been falling, and are we near the bottom as far as Bitcoin is concerned?
Hey, Kieran. It's good to be back. And I think from where we left off, I think we last spoke in November and everything was sort of up in the air and we were looking at Japanese yields. But since then, we've seen a lot more uptick in terms of what the chip makers are doing in the market, as well as the recent war and conflicts that started up between Afghanistan and Pakistan. I think it was, or the Pakistan sort of region, as well as the Iranian war. So all of that has really created this environment of this risk off from where the market originally was, because there was this narrative that, hey, the Fed's going to cut rates. We were in a good place. They're holding. And everyone was really watching jobs numbers and interest rates. But now all of a sudden, the Strait of Hormuz comes under pressure and we have a liquidity problem in terms of where risk really sits. And let's just put that Bitcoin price and where everything currently is. I think there's that being that liquidity sensitive risk asset. I think that's where a lot of pressure comes in. And we've seen the sell-off. We're almost down, I would say, more than 30% than what the average was at a given time. And this has really been spurred off by the volatility that exists in the market, the risk sentiment, the institutionals that are pivoting, not pivoting, but rebalancing and reweighting portfolios, considering these shocks that are existing in the market as well.
All right. Now, Ray Dalio, the billionaire investor, he recently made the case that gold is a better store of value than Bitcoin for a number of reasons, including Bitcoin's lack of privacy, the fact that all transactions are fully visible on the blockchain. Then there's the fact that central banks aren't on board yet. They're not loading up on Bitcoin. They are doing so with gold, however. And of course, the risks of being hacked by quantum computers. Now, that's a bit of a long shot. Maybe it's still decades away. And the Bitcoin developers are very much on top of that one. And they have various defenses lined up for that. But what's your take on that? Is Ray Dalio wrong, or has he got something?
It's a tough way to put it, because I think he's looking at it from a perspective of what is those leaders and the leaders in which are running these countries and running these policies are going to look at the change in economics for this demand of the asset. And if we're looking at central banks have been hoarding tons of gold over the last 2 to 3 years. And we noticed major hoarding really starting with the Russia-Ukraine war that sort of accelerated a lot of hoarding there. But just diving that back in terms of Ray Dalio mentioned these comments. I think it was on the All In podcast where he was having this conversation as well. And in that case, is does Bitcoin become this reliable safe haven? And in a case, it's not. I think there's a lot of maxis that say Bitcoin is gold. And yes, I mean, if you look further enough, you can find something that correlates. And that's what people have done with gold and Bitcoin. Yes, it acts as a safe haven asset at certain times, but it depends how you're comparing it, right? So if you're looking at gold, gold goes back years in terms of what central banks are used to, what policies have been structured around gold reserves in order to manage sort of currency volatility within jurisdictions. And if you consider that while Bitcoin is not yet, well, I would say to a level of store value, but I'm yet to see a person that puts 1,000 Rand in and says, no, I'm going to spend Bitcoin right now at Pick and Pay rather than actually hoard it in my Luno or Vala account in this case, because I know by tomorrow I might see a 10% increase, but there's a give and take there, right? So I think there's that sort of argument to make across where Bitcoin stands. But right now, it's really looking as the speculative asset in its own asset class, because there's a lot of, I would say, functionalities that are built alongside Bitcoin. And we've seen this volatility in this exposure to the asset class. And then when delving into quantum computing, there's, I get where he's coming from, that there's risks there. But unfortunately, there's also the developers within the Bitcoin community that I've chatted to out here in Dublin that they're already working on methods and tools that solve for quantum computing and solve these issues for quantum computing. So I think there's a very divided field on how far quantum computing would work or would accelerate this security function. But when looking at it from, as you said, it's quite a bit of a way overall, but in its fundamental case where we currently are, there's a lot of people working on security and privacy functionalities for on-chain blockchain as well as Bitcoin in this space.
Okay, Shivan, are investors falling out of love with Bitcoin? I'm kind of hesitant to phrase it in that way because historically, if we go back over the 15 years that Bitcoin has been around, what are we looking at? The fear and greed index is in extreme fear at the moment. The RSI, the relative strength index, is in heavily oversold territory. Now, historically, that has been a very good time to buy Bitcoin. And yet this time we were told it's going to be different because you've got institutions, you've got these ETFs that are loading up and then, of course, offloading. So is it really different this time? And what do you think? Are institutions falling out of love with Bitcoin?
Well, I'll be honest, and I might not speak for everyone, but I think everyone has sort of the same feelings that it's a love-hate relationship if you hold Bitcoin and you hold a significant portion of Bitcoin in these turbulent cycles. But in where we currently are, right, I don't think I'm in a position to call a bottom yet, but I think where we currently are is what people are saying on X is currently a lot of whales are looking for about 47, between the 50 and 47 mark, which I don't know would get there. And you would have to see something really drastic to get there right now. But where we're looking at the options market as of today in terms of pricing is that 74 and 82 sort of mark is a good level in which if it breaks that, we might see some squeezes happen within this market right now. But is everyone falling out of love with it? I don't really think so. I think it's just a repricing cycle that we're going through, and it happens. It happens across a variety of asset classes, no matter which field you play in. It's just a bit more steeper than what we're normally used to if you're coming from TradFi into this DeFi ecosystem. But just looking at, I think it was from October till about now, we've kind of seen just shy of maybe 8 billion being drawn out from outflows from ETFs. But I think that's just de-risking overall. I think once we start to see more stable inflows, I think above 74, between that 74, 82 range, a bit higher sustained price, higher there and more sustainable sustainable flows in ETFs, I think we would see a bit more momentum, and I think people would start to get back in. But I don't think out of love with Bitcoin. A lot of people are saying it's going to go to zero, but if Bitcoin goes to zero, BlackRock, Blackstone, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan lose a lot of money. And I don't think anybody would want that.
Yeah, zero is a hell of a cheap price to pay for Bitcoin if it does go there.
It really is.
Okay, now let's talk about Ethereum. That's fallen below $2,000, and the altcoin space also looking like it's in deep pain at the moment. What's going on there? Is the pain being felt more in the altcoin area than in Bitcoin itself?
I think yes. I think, as people know, that the fall is always a bit steeper in the altcoin market. And when looking at Ethereum, it's just going with what that high beta play in the market, right? Which has always been consistent in the altcoin sort of spectrum. But looking at under $2,000, it's still attractive. I think you're still fairly undervalued in terms of attractiveness. If you're looking at utility and what Ethereum's going to bring to the ecosystem as the system matures, under $2,000, I think is still fairly strong. If people are dollar cost averaging, people are getting into the market, I think a lot of investors are looking at this range, because if you follow the Ethereum community, you've seen Base, which is Coinbase's blockchain, come on as a layer two on Ethereum, promoting more sustainable flows within the Ethereum network. We've seen the Ethereum Foundation get their act together in terms of their treasury policy, because a lot of people were very upset in terms of them flooding the market at given points in time. So there's a lot to look forward to in Ethereum in terms of where those next cycles work. I know they released also zero knowledge proof papers and technologies that will be coming through into Ethereum. And I'm pretty bullish on Ethereum if that's where I stand. I might be a Ethereum maxi, but I think, like I've always said, I feel Ethereum fits that Microsoft play very, very well, because it's that utility layer. There's a lot of utility, there's a lot of functionality, and it's constantly supported by Wall Street. And I think that's a bonus.
All right, so talk about that utility and why you compare it to Microsoft, which is an interesting comparison. And I know that you have a newsletter called Beyond Banking, and you're involved in developing what you would call the sort of new frontier of banking. Maybe explain that. My understanding is that we're entering into an era where, for example, if you're a treasury management company, you'll have these AI agents that will hunt around for the best yield on a minute-by-minute basis, maybe not that fast, maybe that fast. I don't know. Tell us. How's it going to work?
Yeah. So currently, Ethereum falls part of that foundational layer. In a lot of people may not know, some people may know, it's called a roll-up technology. So meaning that they would have a layer one, which is Ethereum, and then they would build like a roll-up on top of that. That'll be a protocol. And then they would sort of scale that within an ecosystem. So for a lot of the audience that are listening, I write with my background in corporate treasury for just over a decade now. I put a lot of this understanding and information available to treasurers, CFOs, and FMs. And this is a global scale, because now sitting in Dublin, there's a completely different perspective to how people are looking at stablecoins, how people are looking at treasury. And within this ecosystem, I sort of built this one technology company, which is called Rift Finance. And it was more of a hobby in the Solana ecosystem for a hackathon. But we've garnered very good traction within the ecosystem. And what it currently does is it stands to replicate and compete. I would not say replicate, but replicate the treasury model in which Kyriba and IT2 have been built on, but build the further functionality out in terms of cash and liquidity management, cash flow forecasting, as well as this DeFi treasury banking ecosystem, which is very popular and growing in Europe because of the regulation that exists. And with that, we've seen a lot of European companies look for EuroC rather than USDC because there's a lot of trade that happens across Europe in cross-border that where if you have multiple companies, which generally a lot of them do, and they sit in certain countries like Dublin also in Ireland because of tax efficient structures, they have issues with notional and physical pooling of cash and netting. And what our tool goes in and does is when you have a system like this, it improves your cash visibility, but also allows you to optimize through stablecoin infrastructure. And if you bank with anyone in Europe, we use the open banking rails to actually take advantage and provide that CFO support and provide that treasurer support in the long run. And that's just a layer of technology. For example, we've built on Solana, which is, if you were to consider it, it's an altcoin. It's not built on Ethereum. But we've also spoken about Solana on the pod before, that it's become this prominent DeFi layer, and we've seen a lot of adoption within the Solana ecosystem in terms of what they're doing with privacy, what they're doing with agents. Yeah, and it's been really good. But highly suggest if anyone is interested in knowing more about how DeFi integrates into corporate treasury for CFOs and treasurers, highly recommend giving me a follow on LinkedIn, and you'd be able to just see that that newsletter, and it's for free. I'm not really charging anyone anything for it. It's completely free knowledge.
And it's called Beyond Banking.
Yeah.
Terrific, Shivan Moodley. We are going to leave it there with a fascinating rundown of what's happening in the world of Bitcoin and crypto, and also the new frontier of banking. Fascinating to think that banks are going to be more like websites, you know, where their APIs are available to everyone, and you can then take that data and you can, you know, manipulate it in certain ways and do fairly fantastic things with it to maximize yields and move money faster. And of course, EuroC is the Euro stablecoin. It hasn't really got much traction compared to Tether or USDC. But I guess from what you're saying, that's going to change because of all the trade that's happening between European countries.
Yep. Yes, 100%. And what we noticed when we spoke to a lot of corporates here is that a predominant function of their business is transfer pricing. And if you talk to compliance teams that are managing these businesses, all of them are like, hey, Shiv, do you know how to optimize transfer pricing out of this jurisdiction? And how can you use stablecoins with it? And whether that's looking at their dollar liquidity going out, or whether that's looking at, hey, how can we just pay someone with EuroC via maybe Revolut because they're a small business bank? They have a substantial stance in business banking, but not aggressive. But they have that functionality where you can have this wallet infrastructure with EuroC. And I think that's going to be a really great opportunity for anyone thinking about building in Europe, because currently you have BVNK, which is really dominating the scene. Revolut is extraordinary and coming into South Africa now. And I think that's going to change up a lot of things. So people might not be familiar that I think it's 22.7. I think it's changed. The name changed now. It was a company that was backed by Nedbank, I think it was. And they looked at aggregating your bank account, and it didn't matter which bank you are, but they sort of do that open banking rail. And they were sort of those pioneers in that open banking rail in South Africa, because it doesn't exist. We don't have APIs as free as we would in Europe compared to in South Africa. And that 24/7 really pioneered that function of that open banking rail. And I think the next stage for a lot of payment companies is how do you optimize that information, because everyone's only thinking about, hey, yes, we're charging lower fees and we're constantly charging lower fees, but nobody's really servicing. Hey, how can I optimize that by maybe using Maple Finance and optimize my cash and liquidity rather than sticking my dollars in a bank and earn negative rates or no rates on currency accounts? And I think that's where this yield farming and this optimization that CFOs really need to think about. And like I break it down really consistent for CFOs that are going to read that article, and I talk about the risks, because I've sat there in many occasions telling CFOs that, hey, this is the type of risk that you're going to be exposed to. And not everything is rainbow and sunshines if someone's just promising you institutional custody. What does institutional custody mean to you? And the Reserve Bank equally needs to think about it with Revolut coming into the market as well, because regulation is completely different. And they're going to be a crypto native bank compared to the standard banks, the net banks who have partnered with like the likes of crypto.com, which was a recent notice, I think, from Nedbank, that they partnered as an institutional custody provider as crypto.com. And I think there's a lot of changes happening, but I don't think our regulation is right there to support that Revolut's coming in with this significant technology. It's definitely going to shake a few branches with the payment companies, because I just tap my Revolut crypto card now. It's a virtual card. I pay nothing. I'm not paying anything on banking fees. And I just move money and I tap my Revolut USDC account.
Thanks very much, Shivan Mudli. We'll chat again. There's a lot there to unpack, I think, in a future podcast. But thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.